Hello, St. Louis! Do you want to talk about live music?
I'm Drew.
And I'm John.
And you're listening to The Hourchive,
our ever-growing library of everything. 1 hour at a time.
Dude, are we going to sing a lot in this one?
We might.
Fair warning
yeah.
to the listeners. If you didn't like the 90s music episode, I've never seen them live. I have seen some 90s bands live, though. I haven't seen live.
Oh. Damn, you just did it.
I did it.
Right out of the gate.
I did it.
I guess we're done.
I mean, they're every tour. I hope that they just call it live.
Live, yeah. What's so great about live music?
I'll tell you what's great about it.
Tell me.
Tell it to my heart. Tell me I'm the only one. It's great because you get to hear the music you love being played at the moment, mm-hmm. in the moment. And it's all about the moment. I think that's what's so great about live music is that it's all about the moment.
All about the moment.
Anything could happen.
Yeah. The moment is, and then it's gone.
Yeah. 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 It's gone.
Yeah.
Even if it's recorded.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'll never have the same substance.
That's right.
The same feeling.
That's right.
And some live albums are great,
mm-hmm.
but they're not as good as the live performance.
As being there.
As it was.
Yeah.
But I won't say that live is always preferable to studio.
No.
Some bands are much better
in
the studio.
Well, you did just say that. I mean, you didn't mean it.
I don't mean it.
You're not endorsing that.
I'm
but
not endorsing it.
Yeah.
But some bands are actually much better in the studio than they are live.
True.
And vice versa.
Yeah.
What's the best live show that you've been to?
I can think of probably two.
All right.
I'm going to go on here.
All right.
Two.
All right.
And they're each an example of a different kind of venue and live experience.
Yeah. Okay.
So the first one is Green Day.
Yeah.
Who performed at an amphitheater at the Riverport Amphitheater here for, it was Point Fest. It was a festival, music festival, lots of bands.
A festival of points.
And they were like the middle headliner. So there were like three headliners.
When was this? 90s?
This is like 98.
Wow.
So this is like right on the
Nimrod?
Heels of Nimrod. Yeah.
Nice.
So Green Day, but I had totally written Green Day off at this point.
What?
I was like, oh yeah. Well, because...
Had you not listened to Nimrod?
I hadn't listened to Nimrod.
Okay.
Well, I'd listened to some of Nimrod, but...
Insomniac had not done it for you.
Right. Insomniac, I was more or less, okay, well, I guess Green Day had a couple good albums, and now they're done. But this is also, like, Green Day had gotten so big so fast, you know, at this point. And so that's where they were at this point in their career. They were that big punk band, right? And nobody that I was with at this show was really interested in seeing Green Day. We were all sitting in our seats, you know, just kind of like, yeah, whatever. Here comes Green Day. I guess we'll listen to them, right? You know? You love this story, don't you?
Yeah.
So, Green Day comes on, and all of a sudden, everybody in the place stands up.
Yeah.
So, and we're still sitting there, and I look at my friend, and he's like, well, you know, okay, I guess we'll stand for Green Day, right? You know, we're all sort of dejectedly doing this. We're like, I can't believe we have to stand up, you know, and endure Green Day's performance, you know, for 45 minutes or whatever. We stand up, and I look around, and this is where it all sort of crystallizes for me. I turn around behind me. We were in the seats, the very back of the seats within this amphitheater setup, and behind the seats is the lawn area.
Has Green Day come out?
Yeah, Green Day has just started. They come out, and I think they're playing Nice Guys Finish Last.
Usually, yeah.
And so immediately, everybody jumps to their feet. And... Again, now this I'm looking at this. I'm in a giant venue, you know, the most impersonal of venues you could possibly have.
Yeah, one of the worst venues.
Oh yeah, definitely the worst place I've ever seen a show.
Sound wise,
it's terrible. It's a hellhole.
Yeah,
and my concept of Green Day is these like soulless, you know, they've just completely sold out.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm like, I was in high school at the time, you know, so I was totally just not into this at all.
You're living the lifestyle.
Yeah,
of a
high schooler.
High school, a dejected.
A dejected and jaded high schooler.
Yeah. So I turned my dejected and jaded head around,
yeah,
and I look out on the lawn, and almost as though, like, on cue,
yeah,
everyone in the lawn is just moving in these masses of people,
yeah,
like giant pits of people, just not moshing necessarily, but
a
just
roiling
moving
mass,
yeah, just moving with the music,
yeah,
and
as one,
yes, just a sea of arms raised up in the air,
yeah,
and people moving around and stuff flying. That's
yeah,
that's what really did it for me. Like, this is back in, like, and they probably still do this, like, bands give out CDs and stuff,
yeah,
at
yeah,
big
yeah,
festivals. Well, the people were still, like, recording their demos on tapes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know? So people were, like, people had these demo tapes,
oh,
that had, they'd
man,
gotten, they were, like, chucking them through the air.
Yeah.
So there's, like, all this, like, audio tape just flying around out there.
Oh, man.
And then the audio tapes start landing in the seating area and stuff.
Yeah.
And all of this has happened, and I'm just sort of swept up in that.
Yeah.
And not really even paying any attention to Green Day. And then as the show progresses, Green Day, like, they managed to make this impersonal venue feel like I was in a club with, like, 10 people.
Yeah.
You know, and one of those people is this kid that they bring up on stage to play guitar.
Oh, yes.
They do that really well.
They do it every time.
Every show, yeah.
Every show they'll bring up, well, continue your story. Sorry.
Well, just like this is like sort of the first time I'm seeing this.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen Green
this
Day
phenomenon
before in a club setting, and it was a
yeah,
great show, but I've never seen them in an arena setting,
yeah,
you know. And I'm assuming that they're going to play to the arena, which I guess they sort of do in their own way.
Right.
But they do it in such a way that you feel like they are basically just farting around up on stage,
yeah,
as though it's this show doesn't matter at all, you know. They're
yeah,
just they're just having fun.
Yeah.
And it totally works. It
yeah,
it totally it stuck in my mind. I've never seen a show in that setting that was that good.
They are amazing live.
Yeah.
They really
are.
And I think part of it is at this point it's because they've been doing it for so long.
Sure.
But
they still manage to make it feel fresh, even though
they make
do
it feel fresh, and they have an amazing time. They always
yeah,
seem like they're having so much fun. And I never thought about it, but you're right. They make it seem like this. It doesn't even matter.
Right. Yeah.
But that is what makes it matter so much.
Yeah.
Is that they're, you know, they'll make mistakes. They'll screw up. They don't care. They're
yeah,
just trying to have fun.
They basically still are playing like Gilman Street or
yes,
whatever, you know,
yeah,
or a house party or something. You know, they're,
yeah,
they're not in an arena. They're in somebody's backyard,
yeah,
basically.
And at the same time, it is a show. It's a huge show now.
Yeah.
Like, there's a huge
really
production
elaborate
happening.
Yeah.
And so it's a really strange contrast with them. Mm. You're right. It, on one hand, it feels like three teenage kids who, you know, don't, you know, could care less about how the night goes and are just
yeah,
playing and having a good time. But it's also extremely well orchestrated and timed and
yeah,
like precision timing on like the production that happens around the songs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's
in
really
the transitions.
Great, really great stuff.
Yeah.
And they do every time they play, every time I've seen them in the past few years, they pull up someone from the audience to play a song with them.
Yeah.
And I think every time I've seen this happen, Billy Joe Armstrong, the lead singer and guitarist, gives them the guitar that he gave, like, the guitar they used to play.
Oh, yeah.
He lets them keep it.
That's rad. That's so cool.
And I think I've also, almost every time, like, it's been, like, a dude
uh-huh,
that's up there, like, a teenage kid.
Yeah.
He always kisses them. It's excellent. And the kid's
yeah,
always elated.
Yeah.
And I think at this point now they invite like three people up, like guitarist, a bassist,
mm,
and a drummer to do a song.
That's awesome.
And they've done
amazing.
They usually play an Op Ivy song. They play Knowledge.
They play Knowledge, yeah. Yeah.
It's just it's phenomenal.
What an amazing like lineage for that song, you know,
yeah,
like, because it's basically like Op Ivy, you could argue, is sort of what inspired Green
yeah,
Day to become a band.
Yeah.
And I recognize that they are maybe not as true to the rock and roll DIY, you know,
right,
sort of the punk,
yeah,
you know, core or whatever.
Yeah.
But the fact is that I feel like no matter what, they make it. They make people believe that they can start a band and be successful. Yeah. You know, you can listen to a Green Day song and it's something that you can play.
Yeah.
You know, and even their most elaborate stuff, yeah. I think, you know, you can play some version of it. You know, you can sort of make it your own.
And you don't feel like you can play it because it's not well made. Like, it's,
right.
It's
yeah.
Just,
they're just good songs, yeah. but, you know, they're accessible. Yeah. That's what I think is great about Green Day. They still feel accessible.
They definitely top my list as far as live shows. They are one of the best. I think my favorite show that I've ever seen was what happened like a year, maybe 2 years ago when the Aquabats came to St. Louis and they played the Firebird, which is a relatively new venue. It's nice and small. It's really nice. It's a great venue. It's awesome. Love seeing shows there. The stage is just high enough, but not too high, you know.
Yeah.
But it's not so low that you wonder why is it there in the first place. And the Aquabats, I've been a fan of them since probably I was a teenager, but have never gotten the chance to see them because they very rarely venture away from the West Coast on their tours because they're not, you know, a hugely successful band, so they can't really travel on big, you know, U.S. tours. But with the recent success of Yo Gabba Gabba, which is the creator of that show, is the lead singer of the Aquabats, that they did a live Yo Gabba Gabba thing, and they came
in
to St. Louis.
Same night. Yeah.
Yeah, and so while they were here, they played an Aquabats show.
Awesome.
And it was amazing. I mean, they too have been doing this a long time, and. For those that don't know, the Aquabats are a superhero team that plays rock and roll music. And so they have this whole, you know, narrative going over their music in the show. And they fight bad guys and they, you know, they have little movies that they show you and stuff like that. And it's just phenomenal. And it's so, it just makes you feel good.
Yeah.
Like, it is such an uplifting experience.
Yeah.
To me, anyway.
So fun.
Yeah.
And it is cool. You mentioned that, too, that their performance, like, the show you are seeing,
yeah.
the way they present it, it fits into this, like, you know, fictitious narrative yeah. of the band, like, as superheroes.
Exactly.
Like, you really have a sense that before they came to this show, like they were out, you know, fighting monsters,
yeah.
and that when they leave this show,
yeah.
they're heading out
exactly.
to fight more monsters, you know.
Yeah, but it was. I think what made it great was the venue was relatively small, so it felt very personal.
Yeah.
They felt totally like committed and in it. You know, they like sometimes you see a band and they could seem like they could.
Oh yeah,
they hate being where they are, and they were just seemed to love what they were doing, loved every minute of it. And there was a great moment when they. Pulled again, like this must be a thing that we just like. But they pulled like a I don't know, like a 3-year-old,
yeah.
like somebody had brought their toddler, and like they helped the kid stage dive, you know, which is both extremely scary,
yeah,
and extremely awesome. But I think only at an Aquabats show would you feel safe enough, you know, like those fans.
Right, they're
not
going to like
kill a child,
tear that kid apart.
Right,
yeah,
exactly. And it was just, it was so awesome.
Yeah,
such a good show. You had another one.
I did. You totally cut me off.
Well, what?
I'm just kidding.
To give you both of yours, and I don't get to go. What's your other one?
Yeah, I had the other one. I think this is an important facet of a live show, or what makes a memorable live show can sometimes be related to where you see it. And if you have to travel to see it, that the show can take on, you know, a greater significance. And the other show that I put like at the peak, I was in Austin, and I just happened to be there. I was there like visiting family in San Antonio, and at the same time of that trip, the band Ozma was playing a show in Austin, and it was the last show of this particular tour, which is always, you know, the last shows are always, you know, very unique.
Yeah.
Anyway, and this was the first time seeing them, because again, they're a West Coast band. You know, they don't really tour too often. I think they all have day jobs, you know, and stuff like that. But so I felt so out of sorts, you know, just sort of wandering around Austin. It was my first time in Austin. And then I go into this show and I see this band that I'm really into, you know. It is literally like it's all this hazy, like, you know, fever dream or something. And they put on an insane show and just, you know, really, really sweaty and energetic and jumping all over the place. And then afterwards, you know, they're a bunch of regular dudes and you bump into them at the back of the venue and, you know, oh, hey, you know, great show. And I think that's really cool.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
I had one of my, similar to your Green Day show, one of my favorite shows is in an arena. And it was the, I don't know what it's called now. It used to be, at the time it was called the Savage Center or the Kiel Center.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Normally an arena where hockey is played.
Right.
But, on this evening, Blink-182 was playing.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is my not the first time I've seen Blink-182 live. It's actually the second time. The first time I was not really a fan of Blink-182. I only knew the song Damn It. And that was, Dew Branch was the only album, apart from Cheshire Cat, that was out.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm seeing them now, the latest album is Enema of the State.
Mm-hmm.
Up to this point, I have not gone to a show for a band that I'm like crazy for.
Right.
Unless you count the Ninja Turtles. Which I do, I guess.
Sure.
So anyway, a friend of mine, it was really weird seats actually. She had gotten box seats, like, so we're really high up. We're like looking down on the stage, it's totally, we're nowhere near them. So it shouldn't, for all, you know, intents and purposes, should not be enjoyable. But and I'll touch on that later. So, I think the other two bands that play are Phoenix TX. They open, which it's really weird to think that I've seen Phoenix TX play, formerly River Phoenix.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
They seem like an anomaly in the pop punk world for whatever reason. Like they existed and they didn't.
Yeah, that's kind of true.
But it seemed like they were going to be huge.
Yeah.
So they played, and then the next band to play was Bad Religion.
Yeah. God, that was such a weird show.
So strange to see them before Blink.
Yeah.
And I wasn't hugely familiar. I knew Bad Religion was, and I knew how popular they were in the punk scene, which was made it that much stranger to see them on a Blink tour. And at this point, people were like, Blink are sellouts. This is the album that people started to hate Blink for.
Yeah.
At least the like punk crowd.
Right.
And so it was even weirder to see Bad Religion there, knowing you know, the cred that Bad Religion had versus Blink at the time. But they played, and you know, unfortunately I didn't know much about them at the time, so I couldn't really enjoy it. But then Blink comes out and put on an amazing show. Like phenomenal. They're hitting every song perfectly. They are, you know, the timing is just right. The production is really nice. The moment that I can remember being like, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen was they're playing the song Aliens Exist. And it's the only time I've ever seen them play it live. And it's one of my favorite songs by them. But there's a moment in Aliens Exist where they have this breakdown. And or it's like the bridge. And Tom is singing, you know, his part of it and basically just strumming repeatedly on the guitar. It's like this power chord, you know, frenzy. And as he's doing that, they have a green strobe light on him, just, you know, going nuts. And I was like, this is amazing. I've never seen anything like this, you know. And I was just freaking out over how great the show is. And they're really funny people. Like, they make a lot of jokes during their shows. And so they're entertaining both as musicians and as, you know, just people.
Personalities, yeah.
So I was like, I was just blown away. And unfortunately, it has only been downhill since then seeing them live, because what I didn't know then and what I know now is they're not that good live. Like, they had a night. Like, that night, they were perfect. But I've never seen, since then, every time I've seen them, I've always enjoyed it to some extent, for the most part, because I'm a, you know, huge fan, and I just like seeing them live. And they are really funny. Like, they somewhat make up for not playing live very well with the fact that they're entertaining.
Yeah. There's definitely like a make or break kind of thing. Typically when I find out about a band coming to town or something, the venue really matters, you know, and it didn't always, you know, it used to be sort of irrelevant where they played, where a band played. But within the past like 5 to 10 years, I feel like that has become a major factor in like whether I will get out of it what I want to get out of it. And I almost exclusively the last show that I went to was the Black Keys, and they played at the Chaffetz Arena, which is similar to the Scott Trade or whatever, you know. So it's an arena. It's a small arena, but it's still an arena. And I had a great time, and they gave a great performance, you know. And prior to that, I was at a Rob Zombie and Alice Cooper show, which was amazing. Yeah. I mean, and I feel like that's
they're
kind
made
of show
for that.
They have to be in an arena. Yeah, and I had a great time, you know. Yeah. So I don't have like this. It's not impossible for me to have a good time at an arena show, but I feel like if somebody's coming to town and I see that they're playing in an arena, I would say I'm 50 to 75% less likely to go see them.
Yeah.
Just because of where they're playing, you know? And I don't know why that is.
There's really only one venue that I would not go see.
Avoid. Yeah.
Is the amphitheater.
Yeah.
I'm just sort of done with that place.
Yeah.
I love small show, small venues are so. That is where it becomes surreal. Like when you feel like you're in another world because you're packed in with all these people, and it smells awful. And like, I just have this image in my mind whenever I think of going to a venue like that. I always picture in my head concrete floor and dirty, scuffed shoes.
Yeah.
Like, covering it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know why, but that is my, like...
It's sort of a staple.
...mental model for that, you know? And, like, there's no standardized, like, stage height in these places.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and I really don't like it when the stage is basically one step higher than the crowd. Yeah. Which, there was a place... I don't know if it's still around. I know they moved at one point, but the Creepy Crawl around here, which I only saw one show at, and it was like, I think it was a Friends band, but I was just really annoyed by the stage, which was like, wasn't it basically just like a step? And then
there's
they moved.
A lot of venues like
I don't
that,
know the... where they moved though. I never went to the other Creepy Crawl.
It wasn't much different,
but I was a big fan of the Galaxy.
Yeah, the Galaxy was. Well, that was the first like club venue that I ever went to. I think really that wasn't like, you know, more of a basement than a venue. Like, and that I think that is the that whether because they did such a good job on it or because it was the first, you know, that it kind of defined it for me. But that is what I judge all venues by.
Really?
Galaxy. Okay. Yeah, I saw the newer version of the Misfits there.
Ah,
that was the first show I saw there. I think
I saw the Ataris there.
No, I didn't see them. I saw Blink there.
Mm. Oh man, that must have been great.
Yeah, it was cool. It was very cool. But yeah, that venue, and like it, I feel like the Firebird has similar qualities. And in fact, Mike, who runs the Firebird, actually even said that he was using that Galaxy as kind of a model. But it's like, yeah, the space really comes into play, you know, in how you experience a show.
Yeah.
More so than just like arena versus club, but even like within a club, you know, the smaller it is, obviously the more intimate it's going to feel.
Yeah.
But sometimes that's not necessarily a good thing, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it just for the experience that you want, like, I feel like something like the Aquabats, would not work as well in a smaller venue than what we saw them in. You know, like, I feel like there has to be a certain degree of spectacle to their performance.
And
you know?
I think that also there needs to be an elevation, both literal and figurative, of the band.
Yeah.
Like, they need to feel apart from the audience.
Yeah.
So that they can connect with the audience.
Yeah.
So that it's that much more meaningful.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if they're like, it's like if you go to a show at a house, like someone's friend's band is playing at a house.
Yeah.
It's really easy to ignore that band.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Because they're dudes just in the room at the party.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so that's why I don't like the stage that's one step higher than the floor, because it's so easy to not be impressed by that band, you know, and that isn't fair.
Right.
I know that isn't fair, but it's just the case.
Sure.
And so you need the band needs to be highlighted in some way so they feel above us and then they can connect with us and you can feel like, oh man, this is, you know, I am getting a real connection. Exactly.
Yeah.
There needs to be a barrier for them to cross in a way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It can't be easy. If it's too easy, it doesn't have significance, I think.
Yeah. No, that's good. It's a good point.
But the Aquabats are great. You know, if you were in a room the size of a living room, like, you wouldn't feel like you're getting the real
kind
of show.
Yeah. It wouldn't feel epic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ever go to the side door?
Yeah.
Which to me, from my memory, was a hallway.
Yeah. Basically.
Essentially.
Tiny little.
You went in through a side door.
Yeah.
On some other. I don't know what the other part of the building was. I can't remember.
Yeah.
And I saw Alkaline Trio there.
Oh. See, I could see, depending on where they were in their career, I could see that being.
This was right after the second album.
Okay.
I think. Every venue for me is marked by a band that I saw there.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Uh-huh. So, like, the Galaxy for me is connected to the Ataris. Mm. The Side Door is connected to Alkaline Trio.
That claimed it.
Yeah. Firebird now is the Aquabats.
Uh-huh.
And I think... I don't know. Do you have that? Or does the venue stand on its own for you?
I guess it probably depends on the venue itself, but maybe it's not a particular band, but it's a type of show.
Yeah.
You know, that I'll associate with it, you know. The Firebird is I associate that with bands that are, you know, big enough to tour, you know, and draw people, but maybe not necessarily like everyday names.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I have that association with it, but not, I don't know that I do like a particular band.
The pageant,
mm-hmm.
that for me isn't linked to a band, but it's linked to a genre, ska. Because I saw a lineup of, it was like Suburban Legends, which are a ska band, RX Bandits, which I don't know if you can call them a ska band. Mm. They're very ska influenced.
Fringy, yeah.
But yeah. Less Than Jake and Real Big Fish.
Mm-hmm. It's a hell of a show.
It was a really good show. In fact, that is probably up there too as one of my favorites. And Real Big Fish are really good live. So is Less Than Jake. Both of those bands are really Less good. Yeah. Less Than Jake is like a band of the people. You know, like they are such, I want to say like allies. Do you know what I mean? Like their songs are all about like feeling like you're going nowhere and you know, feeling like you're worth nothing and sort of dealing with that. And so when you see them live, this great unification of you and all these people, and you're all sort of like feeling the same thing and that's live show, you know, live music in general is all about that. It's all about
it's communal.
You know, gathering with other people who you know that you have this thing in common. And that you feel this way, that this music makes you feel a certain way, you know, and so to experience that all together is a huge thing. It really is an experience I don't think I've felt in any other situation, even in other, you know, maybe this is what, like, sports fans feel when they go to...
Right, yeah. It's a yeah.
When somebody hits a home run.
Yeah. Hey, it's awesome.
We all love home runs.
High five.
I was just going to say enjoy a baseball game in general.
Right, like, sure.
They don't need to hit a home run for everyone. But maybe this is what sports fans... I mean, I love going to, without getting into that too much, but I love going to a live sporting event.
Yeah.
Mainly for the food. But, yeah, so Less Than Jake, I think, of not all the bands of the world, but they, to me, really exemplify that unification, that feeling that the band is on your side,
yeah,
and they're there for you, and they're there to, like, connect with you and make it clear to you that you are not alone.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That is what they do for me. And then Real Big Fish are really, they're also really funny.
Mm-hmm.
They're great performers, but they are just, they seem to delight in what they're doing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And one of my favorite live experiences was seeing them in their encore. They came out, first they rolled a piano out on stage. And there's a song on their album, Cheer Up. I think it's called Drunk Again. And the trumpeter / vocalist Scott sings this song, and it's a lounge song, and it's a really, really great song, and he's a really good singer too. He's an excellent voice, and it's one of my favorites on the album. And but it's one of these songs you're like, I'm sure they never play this live, because it's such an outlier of a song.
Yeah.
But anyway, they wheeled out this, and this is the first time I've seen Real Big Fish live. They wheel out a piano, and I'm like, oh my God, are they going to play Drunk Again? And Scott walks out, sure enough, and I'm like, oh my God. And he sits down, and he lights up a cigarette. There's one spotlight on him. He starts playing. And the nature of the song is that as the song goes on, other instruments come in. So as other instruments come in, that band member walks out on stage and starts playing as well. And it's just this great build up into the, you know, crescendo of the song that is just every instrument playing. And they're all like, this room is so smoky from this one cigarette that he's smoking. And like the atmosphere was incredible. And I was just blown away by, you know, the performance of that song.
Mm-hmm.
And it, that is, you know, a lasting memory.
To wake up from your dreaming, it scared you so bad you couldn't control your heart or your breathing. We'll walk out the door with me on the floor. You don't care how I'm feeling. I guess a weak and tired and frightened man is no longer appealing. 'Cause now I'm drunk again.
this is the flip side, I think, of live shows, is it can really turn you off to certain things.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I remember, so I saw, like I said, I saw the Ataris at the Galaxy, and I've told you this before, but before the show, we had parked somewhere, you know, like on the other side of the block. So we were walking through the alley and coming, we came up from behind the Galaxy, like the back of the venue.
Right.
And there's a van there, and sitting, you know, in the van in full view is Chris Rowe, who's the lead singer, and basically the creative force behind the Ataris. And we all knew what he recognized. And we're like, sure. It's Chris Rowe. And so, as fans are wont to do, we approached him. And, you know, I will totally concede that, you know, he was not out signing autographs. He wasn't out, you know, talking to fans.
He was having a moment. Public.
Yeah, he was, you know, having a moment by himself in the van. I totally get that. But it was still very upsetting when he was completely standoffish and seemed totally disinterested. And, you know, if he had just said, look, guys, I'm just trying to have, you know, some time alone here or whatever, I totally, you know, absolutely.
Yeah.
But sure. He just sort of sat there and like, kind of tolerated us while we were like, hey, we're huge fans, you know.
He's just rolling his eyes.
And he's just sort of barely engaging. And there was someone else in the van. He kept, like, turning and talking to them and, you know, like, turning his back to us.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, I want to make it clear, like, we totally invaded his privacy. I know that. to be honest, he's justified in that treatment.
Yeah.
However, he could still have been like, I'm trying to, you know, in an hour, I'm going to have to, like, put on a show. So this is the time I get alone, blah, 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 right?
Yeah.
That's all you need to say.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a jerk.
Yeah.
Maybe he's having a bad day. But that, from that point on, I had a hard time enjoying any new music from the Ataris because of that experience. Because I felt like he was a jerk.
Which he probably was. I mean,
yeah,
it's kind of a tricky thing to do.
And he was allowed to be a jerk, but
sure,
he didn't have to be.
There, yeah, he didn't have to be.
What's the the weirdest show you've ever gone to? Like what? Like you found yourself at and you didn't know why?
Oh yeah,
like why am I here? How did this happen?
How did this happen? What am I doing here?
Yeah.
Oh man, that's a good question. I accidentally found myself in a New Kids on the Block show.
Yes.
That happened.
That is incredible.
They played Six Flags.
Six Flags is a great place to accidentally find yourself.
Have awkward, music experiences. Yeah. So I I was there with you know, a bunch of kids from school or whatever.
Yeah.
Some of whom were girls and some of whom were, you know, interested in the New Kids on the Block. But it wasn't a plan. Nobody knew that the New Kids on the Block were there.
Oh, a surprise show.
It literally was a surprise. Like, we're driving up and they've got that terrible marquee and it's like, NKOTV, coming on this day. And we were like, oh, wait, that's today, you know?
You had to go.
Right, right. So we had to go. And, I mean, it was you know, a New Kids on the Block show.
Wow.
Six Flags amphitheater.
Wow. That is it. That is
in every essence
awesome.
Of the word.
That
yeah.
is so great.
I saw lots of weird stuff. I saw Weird Al at
Six Flags.
At Six Flags.
He played, yeah.
I saw Alice Cooper. Yes, I've seen Alice Cooper twice.
Nice.
And the first time, I was actually, like, third row. And he at one point in the show, he has this, like,
whip
or
crop.
It's riding crop. Yeah, it's not a whip, but
riding
it's that
crop.
Little. Running crop, yeah.
Riding crop.
Riding crop. He threw it into the audience. And it literally, like, it came in the direction of, I could have reached out and grabbed his crop.
You never know what to do. I never want to. I always want to reach out, but I don't.
But you don't, right?
Yeah.
And the guy directly in front of me got it, you know. And I kept thinking, like, afterwards, I was like, I could have easily snatched it. But
my problem is, like, I don't want to seem enthusiastic for some reason.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
You know, whatever.
You want to have your sort of relative indifference to everything that's going on. You know, you don't want to seem too enthusiastic.
In your head, you're like, oh my god. Well, what if I caught that? Don't look like you want it. Don't look like you want it.
Yeah, this is all transpiring, like, within seconds. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I actually had the same. Speaking of Alice Cooper, at that Alice Cooper Rob Zombie show.
Yeah.
That was again like it was a weird situation. Like my friend Matt and I were. He found out about it, mm-hmm. and I was like, "Well, this is too cool." You know, like I hadn't gone to a show with him in a long time, yeah. and it was like. It was right around Halloween. It was the Halloween hootenanny or whatever. Yeah. And so we were both sort of excited about it, but sort of like somewhat disengaged yeah. from it because, yeah. I mean, my God, we're 30 years old and we're yeah. going to see, you know, Alice Cooper. And but at the same time, it was like we were sort of at the back of the floor area. And mm-hmm. at one point, Rob Zombie comes out and he's got one of those like caged light bulbs in his hand. You know, like the kind that you yeah, use yeah, like yeah, when you're yeah. drilling or
yep.
whatever.
Yep. So wireframe.
Yeah, yeah. The lights are completely out in this venue at this point.
Yeah.
And so he's navigating with this light.
Yeah.
He's walking around. And, of course, he's got bodyguards and stuff, but you don't really see them. You just see Rob Zombie.
The artist.
Supposed to be his... Yeah, like... he's creeping around, yeah. you know? And he literally walks right by me.
Yeah.
And I could have reached out and been like, oh, hey, man, Rob Zombie, you know? And he actually posed for pictures with yeah. people. You know, I could have, you know, held up the camera and yeah. and been like, hey, Rob Zombie, you know?
You don't want to be that
I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
I don't want to be enthusiastic.
I cannot, and I wish I would just get over myself and just be enthusiastic and,
yeah.
you know, be... totally comfortable with freaking out over something, but I just cannot do it.
I have approached, you know, people before
yeah,
and talked to them. I talked to Tom from Blink-182 yeah. after a show. I guess it's sort of the reverse of what you were saying earlier with when people make that connection
mm-hmm.
where it's like they are actively engaging with the audience.
It's too easy.
But you feel like it's like yeah, there's something wrong about
yeah.
it or something. Like, you're like, no, this isn't right. This isn't yeah. the way it's supposed yeah. to happen.
No.
Yeah.
Get back on stage.
No,
get on stage.
Wrong. You're ruining it. You're ruining it. Get away.
Go. Don't look at me.
Oh, a classic example of that. So we haven't talked about the Warped Tour yet.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think is like the epitome of a festival mm-hmm. type thing because it both has that epicness, you know,
yeah.
but also very small, intimate
yeah.
moments. I've had so many great moments at like a Warped Tour. This one time, El Jefe from... NOFX
uh-huh.
was like riding around on a bike and like pulled up and like started passing out weed to people. Bizarre. But and then he rode off. But so after the Warped Tour, and I don't know if they still do this, but they used to have a barbecue with all the bands
oh, yeah.
that were hanging around, you know. And it was basically free. They didn't advertise it or promote mm-hmm. it or anything, but if you knew about it, they would let you in. You know, it was
wow.
right out on the lot. And so a couple of years I would go to this barbecue afterwards, and usually it was, I wouldn't like end up hanging around. I would just mostly hang out with my friends,
yeah.
you know, but we would be at the barbecue or whatever. But one year Sum 41 played, uh-huh. Warped Tour and, we actually ended up waiting around the barbecue because one of my friends was basically trying to hit on one of the
yeah.
members of another band. And so the rest of us were just kind of killing time around this bonfire and we're sitting in these lawn chairs with the guys from Sum 41 and nobody's saying anything.
Oh wow.
I mean, it's literally like just us. It's like three regular dudes
yeah.
and the guys from Sum 41
right.
sitting in lawn chairs around this
nobody's
fire.
Nobody's talking.
And nobody's talking. Like everybody's just kind of swigging their beers, you know, and everything and looking around. And you know, you think like surely these guys have something better to do
yeah.
than just sit around this fire.
The nature of a fire, though.
Right. Well, yeah, people are drawn to it, I
guess.
You're
entranced by it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's hypnotic.
Bizarre, though.
Even if you're a successful pop-punk band, the fire will hypnotize you. And you'll just sit and stare at it. That's all you have to do. You shared a moment, though.
We did share a moment.
You were all collectively bored.
Yes, exactly.
That's, oh man. You know, I haven't really had the other than meeting Chris Rowe,
mm-hmm.
and I shook Crash McLarson's hand of the Aquabats, but other than that, I have not had any interactions with, because I'm like, no.
Sort of withdrawn.
That's wrong. This is wrong. I was going to say a show that I found myself at. That was unexpected. our friend Brett, who's been on the show before.
Yeah.
He called me out of the blue and he's like, "Hey, what are you doing tonight?" And I didn't have any plans. And he said, "I won tickets to go see Creed." And neither of us like Creed.
Yeah. Well, who does?
But he won tickets, you know? So we're like, well, let's do it. So he came and picked me up, and we, the show was at the Savas Center.
Mm-hmm.
And so we drove, you know, to St. Louis, downtown St. Louis, and, he had won them through 105.7 The Point. And so we go up to the Point van, and there's a guy out there, and Brett's like, I won tickets, you know, on the radio. And he says, "What's your name?" Gives him his name. And the guy says, "Well, you're not on the list." And he goes, "But, you know, well, I won." I mean, and so the guy tells us, he says, "Go to the office." And he like tells us where that is, like the Point off where they are located. The Point is located. And see if maybe they may have your name there. So we go, it was walkable. We walk to where this is and nobody's there. It's closed. And so we're like walking around the building, trying to figure out, you know, if anyone's there. And we find the DJ booth. There's like a big window where the DJ is, and he's doing his DJ duties, you know? And so we knock on the window and he's like, "What?" He sort of like looks over his console and he gives us like the just 1 minute. He sort of like, actually he points to where the door is, the entrance. And he's like, you know, gives us a hold on. So we go to the entrance. Eventually he walks up and he's like, "What can I do for you guys?" And, Brett tells him, "Well, I want tickets. You know, they don't have them at the van. He said to check here." And he goes, "Okay, well, come in." And he like takes us to the front counter and looks around and like, he's like, "Well, if they're not here, I don't know where they are." And, he's like, "Sorry guys." So we head back to the van and tell the guy, we tell him, "Well, they don't have them there." And the guy just looks at us and he's like, "Just here." And he gives us two tickets. And I just have to imagine, he's like, "It's just Creed."
Right. You know? Yeah.
And so we get into the show, and the show is not just Creed, but it's, Finger 11,
cool.
Days of the New,
oh, God.
And Creed. And
then you were like, you ran back to the van, didn't you? And you were like,
"Well, we
keep these tickets."
We got to our seats. And I think we both just sort of like looked at each other, like, sort of like, "What, what are we doing here? Like, we're just here 'cause it's free, you know, it's a free show."
Right. Yeah.
And I think we're both curious, like, what is a Creed show like, you know? And so Finger 11 played and we sat through, it was so, I think we had a good time because of the overall situation,
right,
but not because of the music. And then Days of the New came out and they were really pretentious. And then Creed came out and they were very pretentious, and very
hard to imagine.
Earnest. But the best part of Creed was their, I think he's either the bassist or the guitarist. And all he did for like the whole show was he had 1 foot up on a speaker and he like was playing his instrument and just like bobbing his head, you know, up and down, like nodding to the music, like all the way through. It was phenomenal. It was, yeah, that was an incredible experience.
I just love like picturing you guys sitting there
and the people there.
Yeah,
around us. We were just like, "What is happening?
Where do these people come from?" Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it was so something else.
That's excellent.
Really crazy.
Never heard the club on the weekend. At the super game joint with my best friend. Couldn't wait for the summer and the world tour. I remember it's the first time that I saw her. She'll always be there. She took my hand and I made it, I swear, because I fell in love with the girl that the rock show. She said what? And I told her that I didn't know. She's so cool. And the same thing we did, knowing everything's better when she's around. Go and tell her parents, go out of town. I fell in love with the girl at the rock show.
about like the makeup of a show. Mm. What happens in a show?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get there, like, it always takes forever for the band to come out.
Yeah.
And like, the rodeo
never on time.
Out, everyone cheers.
Yeah. Yeah, as soon as somebody comes out to, like, move a mic stand, everybody's like, whoa!
But then once people are wise to the fact that it's just roadies, then they ironically cheer.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody, and there's always somebody who's like, yeah, let's hear it for the roadie!
Yeah. Some genius.
Yeah.
He's pretty sure he made that joke for the
first
time
He's the first person
ever.
To ever, yeah, do that. I like the idea that people have been doing that since, like, the days of
no kidding
the Doors and like you know Chuck Berry
earlier I'm sure.
Yeah, there's somebody Frank Sinatra comes out
and then you like well how what's your feeling on mosh pits
it really depends like I've been in some great pits and usually like I feel like the idea of a mosh pit, like everybody sort of assumes that it's always the most violent iteration of that, and usually it's not. Like in most shows, I think it's mostly just people who want to be energetic and run around. It's like the sensationalized version of a mosh pit. Where people are like practically knifing each other to music.
Right.
You know? It's never, I've never seen it get that bad. Well, I take that back. I have seen it get that bad one time. But actually, I wasn't even in a pit, but I saw somebody, two girls get into a fight, and one of them had these little razors like strapped to her hand. I don't know how she got them into the place. But yeah, so they were like little, it was like a strap with. Wrapped around her palm with a razor on the inside of her palm.
Oh, my God.
And she was literally, like, bashing this other girl with these razors.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. But, again, that wasn't part of a pit. It was just these two going at it, you know? But I like them. I mean, I think, for the most part, people generally... Everybody's in there for the same reason.
Yeah.
Occasionally, you get some drunk dude, you know, who just wants to knock heads or whatever. But I feel like they are typically very good at self-policing. You know, so if you've got one guy who's being a jerk, everybody else will sort of band.
That's
against
true.
Him,
that's
you know?
True.
Obviously there are exceptions to that, but for the most part, I'm pretty good with pits.
There's nothing more unappealing to me than running around in circles and shoving one another while I am trying to enjoy the music. I hate mosh pits. I hate them. I hate them so much. And I get so... This is, like, my thought process during this show. Like, first... Okay, you start the show, and you're standing there. And, like, as I'm sitting there, I'm just thinking about the fact that once the band comes out, like, there's going to be a surge to the stage. And, and I'm going to get compressed.
Yeah.
You know, and I've resigned myself to this. I'm okay with that. It is what I expect now, right?
Okay.
So I'm like, okay, I'm prepared for that. I know that's going to happen, and I'll actually get to be closer, which is good. So that's fine. And usually, for a lot of bands I see, the fans are usually nice people. So that usually isn't, you know,
right,
not next to a bunch of idiots. I mean, some of them are, but. So I'm just sitting there.
Brett.
Okay, once they come out, okay, here they are. Okay, here we go. I got to move with this crowd. Get up there. Okay, this is. I guess this is where I'm gonna be now. And now I got to work my arms up and out because like you are literally pressed on all sides by people. So the space that you have is reserved to the shape that your body makes when all of your extremities are
at your
side. So you are basically. In a lowercase L shape, right? So you have to like inch your arms because I don't want to like shove people around,
right? So you don't, you never, you don't like, you're not a shark.
No,
you're
no,
not,
no.
You're not like slipping through cracks in the crowd.
No.
Okay.
I like to be where I am and I just stay there and I just settle with what I have.
I hate sharks.
I do too.
I hate sharks.
There's a variation on the shark who, this is before the show has started usually.
Uh-huh.
There's the shark who's always, there's someone up there that knows them.
Oh,
and
yeah.
What they do is they walk her, and I don't, half the time I don't buy it.
Yeah.
But they walk around with their chin up, like they're looking for their friend up front.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
they do this thing where they act as if they've seen them, and they're like, oh, hey,
yeah, yeah.
And then they wave, and then they sort of push past you.
Right.
And then you see him continue to do it. And you're like, okay, you're just trying to get up front.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but anyway, so, you know, now the crowd is there. I finally got my arms out because I want to, you know, sort of pump my fist to the music and mm-hmm. enjoy it. And I know my arm's going to get tired because I can't really lower them very effectively. But so as the music's playing, I'm like, this is awesome. This is so good. Oh, man, it's a little loud, but I'll be fine, you know. Then I see... like the beginnings, I don't usually see it. Actually, I feel
you feel it.
Mm-hmm. I feel a sudden like push. You know, mm-hmm. like I get shoved back, and I'm like, oh god, here we go. And the pit starts to form. Uh-huh. And the worst thing in the world for me is to be on either the edge of the pit. Uh-huh. Or just behind the edge, like the second layer of people.
Yeah.
Because then you're one of the people that has to regulate the pit and, like, keep people from, like...
Yeah, keep bracing people.
Yeah, it's
people,
like, all right,
yeah.
Just stay in there.
Yeah.
And I do not like that. I want to watch the show. I don't want to watch these people run around and shove... I don't understand it. What is fun about shoving each other? What's fun about that? You tell me you
it's
like
energetic.
It.
Yeah,
no, it's
you know,
not. It's
sure.
Okay, it's energetic.
Yeah, but you're talking to the kid who used to stomp around his bedroom listening to music. You know?
That's perfect for you.
Yeah.
Maybe your first mosh pit, you just tried to stomp and someone shoved you like,
this is great. It's a whole other outlet. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'm like, well, why don't you want to watch the band?
I have fallen out of pits. Like,
well,
meaning like
we're in our 30s.
Right. Yeah. I don't feel like I'm appropriate you know, in a pit. But... at the, you know, when I was a teenager, yeah.
The only time that I approve of a pit is at a Real Big Fish show when they play the song in the pit. Because that song makes fun of mosh pits.
See, okay.
And it's an ironic mosh pit. And then I'm okay with it. Oh, man, yeah. And, you know... so to continue the thought, like the pit has started, so I'm like, okay, I'm gonna deal with this now. And then, like, usually someone farts or something, and that's horrible. Like, this already smells bad, and then there's
and
like people
worse.
Feel people love farting at shows because no one can tell who's doing it, and so I'm always expecting to get, you know, bombed in some way.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to talk about though is the encore, which is now an expected thing.
Yeah.
For a lot of bands. So,
yeah.
You know, and Blink-182 makes a joke of it now. We're like, we're going to go off stage, but we're going to come back.
Yeah.
You know? so they're totally straight with it. But I was thinking about this as I was listening to Real Big Fish's live album, which is very good. And the last track is their single, Sellout.
Uh-huh.
Which is their most successful song ever,
right.
You know.
Ironically.
And I was thinking about, like, this is a song they play at every show, you know. And it's a song that was overplayed to, you know, ad infinitum on the radio. And for all intents and purposes, should be... like, I should be totally sick of this song. When I listen to it on the album or I listen to the live album, I enjoy it, but it's like, whatever. This is their single.
Mm-hmm.
But what I realized is a good single, a good hit single, a good show-ending single does something that I think none of the other songs can do, usually.
Mm-hmm.
And... I think at a live show, that single becomes more than the instance of that song. That single becomes the representation of every awesome experience you've had with that band. Like, it is, and it's what you're waiting for the whole night, is to hear that song live. And it reminds you of the first time you heard it live. It reminds you of, like, the first time you had, you know, you and friends heard it together or something, or like conversation, you like, it is the embodiment of that band
mm-hmm.
and what it means to you. I think this is what I think.
That's a That's a great statement. I mean, I never think about it in those terms, but it's, I think you're right.
But you're not excited because you're hearing Sellout. You're excited because this is what I came for, to experience this live music with this band, with these people, you know, and
it's the signature experience.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. It encapsulates everything.
When you hear the first, you know, few notes of that song, you know, of whatever band it is, it's elation. It is that pinnacle moment in the night that you've been waiting for. And it's the feeling you can't capture elsewhere.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's recorded or what have you, like in that, it, like we said, like live music is about the moment, and that is the moment.
Yeah. Damn, you're right.
That's what I think.
So what do we do for an encore?
We're going to go off stage. We're not coming back.
Well, maybe next week.
Yeah. Yeah. Encore next week.
Okay, good
deal. Put this in the archive.